the new year. Now, I don't know about you, but I feel like some things in my life, maybe things in this world, maybe things in our church even, there's some things that need to be rebuilt, reconstructed, reestablished. I just sense in my spirit so many things have fallen by the wayside. Many things that have distracted, taking precedence in many regards in our life, taking us away to something other than just being in the Lord's presence and really seeking Him and Him being the priority of our lives. So I'm going to take us to a place where they did some rebuilding. And we're going to the book of Nehemiah this morning. As a background to what's going on here, the children of Israel have been in captivity in Babylon for 70 years. And it was Ezra who first went back to Jerusalem to start to rebuild the temple. 14 years later, Nehemiah went back to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem. Both were needed, especially in those days. The temple for worship obviously got built first, but then the wall around the city was rebuilt so that there would be protection to worship. They needed to be protected from the outside so that they could worship the Lord again. Now, rebuilds like this one happen in people's lives, happened in the children of Israel's life, happened in your life, happened in the church. When you get off base and things get deconstructed, things fall apart, that's when you need to rebuild. Their rebuilding project was the result of their rebellion. And even when that happens, and it does, doesn't it? We kind of go off in a direction and things fall apart, and then we need to rebuild. We need to kind of go back and start over in some regards. So even though this was their doing, God never intended for them to stay in Babylon forever. He wanted them to come home to Jerusalem. And when they came back, He knew they would find the whole city in ruins. The wall was destroyed. The temple had been destroyed. Remember, all these things that they cherished in Jerusalem were just fallen down. There was so much rubbish, as you're going to see here. You couldn't even walk through the town and the city of Jerusalem. So much rubble. Everything was in ruins. So I want to point out a couple of things before we get into our study. But if you're in this place, and I'll just confess right up front, I am in a place where I need some rebuilding, reestablishing, rethinking and resetting in place certain things. Now, because of that, this story tells us not only how that's done, but even before it's done, how to prepare for it. Now, this is important because I take this step periodically, and I'll confess as well, this is not the first rebuild that I've underwent. I've had many rebuilding projects in my life, in my character. I've had to go back over things. And we are fallen. We're in a fallen condition. We're not doomed. We're going to heaven. But we have a nature that's still sinful. We call it the old nature, the old man. He's still around, and he still causes trouble. And so when we're subject to him, meaning we cater to him, the flesh, the old nature, then we get ourselves in places where it's time to regroup, reconstruct. I find the first of the year a good time. to do that. Not making a New Year's resolution, but taking on a New Year's rebuilding project. And I'm up for it, I'm into it, but first there's preparation that needs to be made. Let's take a look at chapter 1, and I'm going to begin in verse 3. What happened was Nehemiah is there in Babylon, and he hears some news. It says there that they said unto me, a man named Hanani came to him in verse 2, but verse 3 says, and they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down. The gates thereof are burned with fire. So he hears the news that things are broken down. And listen, if we pay attention, we will also hear when things are broken. You got to pay attention. You can ignore it. You can close your ears to it. But when God lets you know something's wrong, if you don't hear that, it's because you didn't want to hear it. And I think it's interesting. His ears were open. Nehemiah's ears were open to hear this news. And so it says in verse 4, it came to pass when I heard these things that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. The preparing for rebuilding, the preparation for rebuilding starts there. It starts where you acknowledge that there's brokenness. You acknowledge that something's not right. And again, we can put this into a category where we don't want to pay any attention to it. We're all pretty good at that. I can say for myself, at least, the rebuilds I've gone through in my life have always taken longer than they should have to get to that point. In other words, the distraction of all the things in life sometimes keeps me from even noticing that things are broken. But note this, a messenger from the Lord came to Nehemiah and said, things are broken. Jerusalem's broken. So the Lord can speak that to me, and he does, again, frequently. Something's broken. What do you do when that's the case? What do you do when you hear that from the Lord? How do you get that that right attitude about what you hear? And this goes through every facet of your life. Well, when he heard the news that there was brokenness, he began to weep and mourn. Jesus said that, didn't he, in the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. But people say, well, blessed are they that mourn. It's not a blessing to mourn. Yes, it is. When you're broken, it's a blessing to acknowledge it, to say, yes, that's happened, and to weep and mourn over it. The condition of my heart, I'll tell you, just honestly, I wept last night. Just as I was studying through this, the Lord just revealed some things to me again. And I'm like, ah. And the heart of a believer ought to be tender to the things that God shows us and reveals to us. Don't be hardened. Don't be callous. Be tender to that. And if you're not tender, ask the Lord to tenderize you. That's a big prayer right there. And you want to grab a hold of something when you pray that. Right? Lord, I don't think I'm very tender. My heart's pretty callous. Would you tenderize me? You ever use one of those tenderizing hammers? Yeah. Got the little spikes in them. You ever use one of those? They work. You can take a tough steak, man, and just beat it to death. And you put it on there, and boy, that's tender now. Same thing. But if I'm honest in my relationship with God, I'm going to ask for that occasionally. Because I can tell, I don't know about you, I can tell when I'm callous and I'm hardened to the voice of God. And I need to be tenderized. And so he's tender. His heart's open to hearing from the Lord. And so that's the first step. That's the first thing. I hear it. Okay, I acknowledge it. I'm not going to argue with you. You know, confession And that whole idea of dealing with God in that way, it means to agree with him. It means to agree with God. When he says, you're broken, don't argue with him. Say, no, I'm not broken. It's futile to argue with God, first of all, but it's really flying in the face of his knowledge and wisdom in your life. So don't argue. When we agree with God, then we're going to spare ourselves a lot of anguish and a lot of trouble. But that's that whole idea. I acknowledge, I agree with you, God. I always put it this way. The argument's over. When God speaks, the argument's over. This discussion's over. I just need to listen and do what he's saying. So watch what Nehemiah does again. And down in verse 6, we pick it up again. He says, he's speaking again to the Lord. He speaks to the Lord about this. There's your first clue of how to handle this idea of being broken and preparing for how you're going to rebuild. You know, when you hear and you mourn and you grieve over that condition, then you got to pray. You got to talk to God. And as he prayed, I think it's important. At the middle of verse 6, he says, I pray before thee now day and night for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we, includes himself, have sinned against thee. Both I, my father's house, have sinned. We've all sinned. The children of Israel are sinful, Lord, and we've committed sin, and that's why we're in this condition. So this is confession, confessing to the Lord, again, agreeing with him. And he says in verse 7, we have dealt very corruptly against thee and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commanded thy servant Moses. We haven't really kept your word. We really haven't done what you've asked. When we talk about rebuilding, and I hesitated to say this, but I think I need to say it. We're not talking about build back better. Listen, this is not a pun necessarily, but what the world is trying to establish, including our own government, is we need to build back better our country. Do you think that's going to happen? Do you think that we're going to have a country built back better than it used to be because man is trying to put into place and slogans are being made up for that purpose? Do you think that gets it done? Well, I'll just remind you of the psalmist who said, except the Lord build the house. The builder builds in vain. It's for nothing. Man cannot build back better. All man can do is make things worse. And by man's own power and ability, things just fall apart even more so. So we're seeing that in our nation. We're seeing that in the world. So it's not about that. It's about letting the Lord build us and using the tools, using the means that the Lord gives us. Prepare for that. Get ready for that. Acknowledge that you're broken, right? And weep and mourn over it. Get serious about it. And then, you know, pray. Ask the Lord to deal with you because you know that you're sinful. Confession of why I'm in this distress. I'm in this condition, God, because we've sinned. We've all sinned. That's true of our country. That was true of Israel. It's true of your life personally. So that first part of preparation takes place. So now, after this happens, there needs to be some action. So I'm going to acknowledge, I'm going to say, Lord, I hear you. I agree with you. I confess this. This is sinful. This is what we really have done to ourselves. And so now, after that, Nehemiah takes some steps that are important for us. And I want you to jump over to verse 11 of chapter 2 of Nehemiah. Chapter 2, verse 11. So he says, and you know how this story's going. I'm not going to take the time to go through the part where Nehemiah asks the king if he can go back to Jerusalem. He asked the king at that time, you know, he wanted to go back, and the king said, okay. And the king actually gave him the freedom to do it, but also he gave him access to his own forests where he could have lumber milled and brought with him to Jerusalem to rebuild the gates of the city, and then also letters to the governors and anybody he met from the king of Babylon that would basically say, hey, you can do what you want. Very generous. Now, was that something that Nehemiah orchestrated? Or did God just show favor to him? Because, and this is important, because Nehemiah listened to the Lord and wanted to be a part of what God was suggesting, which was rebuilding, then God showed him favor. Because he's doing what God wants. You with me? He didn't get shut down because this was not his project. And listen, this is always something that I wrestle with. Lord, will you bless my project? Will you bless what I want to do? And the Lord, listen, as much as he loves us, he's not obligated to bless your project. I'm not going to get God to bless this or that or the other. He will always, though, bless his project. And so he's blessing him. He gave him all this favor. And so it says in verse 11, Nehemiah takes these steps. He says, I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night and I saw some few men with me. I took some guys with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me save the beast that I rode upon. He sat on his own horse, and that was all he was doing, was going to take a little trip around the city. Now, I want you to note that he already has a pretty good idea what he's going to find. It's not hard to figure out. It's just looking at the outskirts even of Jerusalem, you would have been able to tell places in ruins. You can see it. But he's going to take a closer look. But I want you to note this, because people will say, should we go back and re-look at all of our failures and all the things that have broken down in our life? Well, I think it's appropriate for one reason, and only for this reason, and not appropriate any other time for any other reason. It's appropriate for Nehemiah to go view the ruins so that he can see how much and how to rebuild. If you examine the ruins of your life, make sure it's for that purpose, because I do need to see the damage. I do need to know what's really fallen down, and I need to know how much that's going to take to get that rebuilt. So he went out by night, it says, verse 13, by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof that were consumed with fire. Gates were burned in that siege of Babylon, and the wall of Jerusalem was literally just broken in pieces. So he's going to go look at that. Now, I think it's interesting that what Nehemiah experiences by looking at the ruins, and we would say the ruins of his life, the ruins of his homeland, the ruins of Jerusalem, what he's going to discover would surprise many. And I think we learn from Nehemiah how we're supposed to approach this. When Nehemiah went, it says, he says, then verse 14, I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pools, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. The horse he's riding can't even get through the rubble. Can't walk. You take a couple of steps and there's just piles, stacks of broken stuff everywhere. So much so the horse can't navigate through it. You know, horses are pretty spry, but they can't do the impossible. This was an impossible passage, seemingly, for him. And so he said, man, we couldn't even go any further. I had to kind of navigate through this. It was very difficult. He says, then I went up in the night by the brook and viewed the wall and turned back and entered by the gate of the valley and so returned. So what he had to do, he couldn't go through the city at ground level, we would say. He had to go back up the slope and then kind of walk around a little bit up top to view everything from above. That's how messed up it was. But he got a higher view when he did that. And there's the picture. So he had to go up and look at it from above, getting the view that perhaps we would say God has. Getting some perspective. It's always good to get the perspective God has, right? So he looks at that. And I think it's important as we look at this, he says in verse 16, the rulers knew not whether I went. He didn't brag about this. He didn't talk about this to people yet. This was kind of for him first, and then he will share this with others. You know how that works, right? Before you say something to somebody about something that's wrong with them or something that they're dealing with, you might want to make sure that you're taken care of first. You know, Jesus said, you know, how can you take a speck out of your brother's eye if you got a log hanging out of your eye? You know, that idea here. He doesn't speak of this because, for one thing, he's not done assessing what needs to happen. And you don't need to talk about necessarily what you're going to do in rebuilding your life as much as you just need to kind of work that out first with the Lord. And then maybe later you can talk about that. I get weary of myself. I get weary of people's attitudes that they talk about what they're going to do. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this straightened out. Okay, what I would say is talk is cheap, right? Talk doesn't do it. So he's not saying anything at this point. I didn't tell anybody. He says, I told it not to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work, or literally that were going to do the work. I didn't talk about this yet. And here's why. Watch this, verse 17. Then, finally, he says, then I said unto them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth in waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, he says, thereof, that these burnt gates and all this ruins, come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no more be a reproach. What Nehemiah was doing, going out and assessing, was not looking at the damage so that he could get discouraged. So often this happens, doesn't it? You take a look at some things in your life, perhaps, and you realize, ugh. And it's a bummer. It's a discouragement. He didn't go out to look at the ruins to get discouraged. He went out to encourage himself because he had a different viewpoint. You'll see here in a sec. But his vantage point of looking at these ruins was really awesome. Why? Because when he saw all the ruins laying there, he didn't see just damaged walls and things falling down. What he noticed was there's so much stuff here, right? Yeah, but it's in ruins. Correct. But he saw building material. Lots of it. Everywhere. Everywhere you look, he couldn't even ride his horse through town because there's so much of it. And people say, well, that's not a good thing. So much rubble. Yeah, but listen, when you are God's child, he can use the rubble and the ruins to rebuild. Anybody experienced that? Some of the things that you went through, some of the past things that you had to go through because of perhaps your own sinful condition or whatever, many of those things we would call ruins and wreckage are the very things God uses in our life. He uses trouble and trials and rubbish, we would say, oftentimes to rebuild the wall. So Nehemiah encouraged himself, and then he encouraged the people. I think about David in 1 Samuel 30, when David was about to be stoned because the people were so upset about all the families and all that that got slaughtered, Ziklag, David was like in a mess. People were like hating him and wanting to kill him because he was the leader. And so it says there in 1 Samuel 30, verse 6, that David encouraged himself in the Lord. The reason for that is because nobody else there was going to do that. Nobody else was going to encourage David, so he encouraged himself. You're going to need to understand that. There's times when nobody's going to encourage you. You're not going to find encouragement, perhaps, from anybody. There's just certain things that aren't encouraging. And it's a rare person, by the way, that has the gift of encouragement. And heads up, discouragement's not a gift. Some people think they have the gift of discouragement. But he had to encourage himself, David did, because nobody else would. This is what Nehemiah did. He went out into that rubbish, and God showed him building material. And many believe that a lot of the things that were used in material-wise in rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem was the rubbish. You know, not all of it. Some of it had to be discarded, but there were enough big chunks of stuff that you could reuse in putting into the wall. You know, archaeologists have found that wall, the parts of it around Jerusalem. When we go to Jerusalem, right there in the old city, we see a little section of Nehemiah's wall. And I just got to say, it's not a masterpiece. I mean, it's not like, whoa, look at the perfectly cut stones and all that. No, it looks like somebody kind of patched it together and put it together with all kinds of chunks and different, and that's kind of what happened, we believe. But that's okay. Why? Because it worked. And you'll see, this is going to work. This wall's going to be built. I don't know that anybody would have stood back and gone, wow, look at that. But it was there. Don't you feel like that sometimes? Not everybody's going to look at you and go, wow. But, you know, they may look at you and say, oh, I guess he's saved. Oh, we'll just leave it at that. So he says in verse 18, then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, well, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this work. They got encouragement from Nehemiah, and they began to be interested in rebuilding now. I bring that up because we have to be interested in building back up the broken places of our life. And honestly, folks, frankly, some people just aren't interested in doing that. It's sad to me, and you run across people that are so down, so discouraged, they've gotten so far removed from the victory and the element of power that God has available, that they just are in a place of defeat. And honestly, you know, God doesn't want us to live in defeat. The children of Israel were disciplined, but God didn't want them to be defeated. And there's a difference. I can go through something that might be disciplinary from God, but it doesn't mean that I have to be defeated. I just have to know that this thing that I've brought upon myself needs to be fixed. Acknowledge it, confess it, start praying about it, and then making sure I look at it appropriately like Nehemiah did and start getting ready to rebuild. And when you do that, it's going to encourage other people. Your own personal building project is going to encourage others. Like this, the people are like, okay, let's get to it, right? And jump down to chapter 3, verse 1. We see a list of a bunch of people. And I'm not going to read all the names, but you can read through verse 3 or 4 there. And and see that there was a number of people that were used to build the wall. And these are some of the names mentioned of families and groups of people. But this is a key. When the rebuilding starts to happen, it has to be with the understanding that I need to be around people when I'm in that rebuilding place. I need to be around people that are doing the same thing. We would say fellowship. It's important to be around people that are into rebuilding, encouraging you and you encouraging them. Don't be around people that aren't into it. Why? Because they'll tend to pull you down. You're going to see here, because some people want to build this wall back, you're going to see here that there's others that want to stop them from doing it. Sounds crazy, right? Who would try and stop a person from wanting to have a life that's rebuilt and the broken things fixed? Who would want to discourage anybody from doing that? Oh boy. And I think the encouragement here is, hey, why don't you hang around builders, not those that tear down? Why don't you be around those that help build you up, encourage you, not tear you down? So I want to point out in these verses here, let's look at verse 2. It's talking about Eliashib, the high priest, who rose up and began to bring guys like Hananeel and all these guys from the tower there. The next unto him, though, that builded the men of Jericho, and next unto them built Zakur, the son of Imri. And on it goes, look at verse 4, and next unto him repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, and next unto them, and on, and next unto them, and next unto them, and next unto them. Not just pointing out that the names of the people, but that they were next to other people. You need to understand, I need to get this down better. I need people next to me. You need people next to you. And I've argued literally with people about this. Some people, I don't need anybody. I don't need to be around anybody, right? You hear these people who say, I don't need to be in church. Okay, but you do. You need people next to you. And the people next to these people, that on and on it went, these people were encouraging the other people to do what they were doing. And without that encouragement, there would have been a lot of depressed people in this group. But because they were next to each other, and God always wants to use someone else in your life to help you rebuild, to help you get reestablished. It's what the body of Christ does for each other. If you don't have that element in your life, it's really difficult. I struggle with this sometimes. Lord, can't we just get this done? Do I need to talk to people about it? Do I need to be around people and get this done? Can't you just snap your fingers, Lord, and make it happen? The process of going and getting reestablished in whatever it is in your life that's fallen down is going to be requiring people around you. You're going to need people. We need each other, right? Again, I don't want to start quoting phrases like it takes a village or something, but it takes people. We need the body of Christ is people, all different kinds of people. I've experienced encouragement and help from the least likely people that I've ever run across sometimes. Sometimes it's like the least likely person you could imagine. They're the encouragement. They turn out to be a great encouragement to me. Not always. But there's many times the Lord will say, listen to them, or listen to him, or did you hear what they said? Because I don't know about you, but you can hear 50 things that are encouraging. And then one person comes up and says something that's discouraging. And it tends to negate every positive, encouraging thing you heard. Doesn't it? Like all you can think about, that person doesn't like me. That person, did you, why did they say that to me? I'm serious. You can hear a bunch of good things and then one thing that's negative sinks your ship, right? Boom. Oh. Well, God knows that. So you need others around you. Because if somebody comes and says that, he'll send somebody else to say, hey, no, this is good, man. We're going to rebuild. Hey, we're doing all right. This, the Lord's with us on this. The Lord's with you on this. I'm so blessed that you're doing this, that you're letting the Lord work this out in your life. I've dealt with people over the years, folks in this church, many times over, where they've gone through something that needed to be rebuilt, and watching and encouraging them in that, such a rewarding thing. It's such a blessing to see somebody get through and get back into that place where they're loving the Lord again, worshiping the Lord again. It's so encouraging, and it's so much of a part of what we're to experience. I hope you experience that. I hope you've had people in your life that have helped you through things and helped you do that, or you've helped others. So here we are. Now they're ready. We've got the names of the people. They're kind of going through the preparation part. Now they're prepared, right? All these things that prepared them. Now it's time to build the wall. Now it's time to do it. So we don't want to end the story there where they're prepared. We want to see them complete the task. All right? And this is what God's always pointing out to me. Don't stop there. Don't stop there. Come on, keep going. You've gotten yourself all ready for this, but you haven't done this yet. Remember what James said. Don't just be a hearer of the word, but be a doer. Don't just say, okay, I heard that, and that's good. I agree with that. I appreciate that, Lord. That's not getting it done. And so there's more to the story. So it came to pass in verse 1 of chapter 4, it came to pass that when Sanballat, now this is a guy that hates the Jews. He's the enemy of the Jews. Sanballat's name means sin. So this guy represents just the sinful condition of the world. And Sanballat, when he heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth or angry and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. This man gets mad when he hears about them trying to rebuild. Some of you have experienced this very thing, I know. When my life was in ruins and tatters because I was an alcoholic, I was a drunk, there were people in my life that tried to convince me I wasn't and didn't want me to stop drinking. And I know why. I mean, I realize why, because they were drunks too. And if I had a problem, they had to kind of look and see if they had a problem. And they didn't want to do that. So they tried to convince me I didn't have a problem. There's no problem there. But they got upset, some of them, that I was actually acknowledging that I had an issue and confessing and wanting to do something better in my life, that God was calling me to go to a better place in my life, not be dragging this around. So we see here that Sanballat represents that. He represents a lot of things: Satan, sin, the evil the world mentality has. So he spake before his brethren, that is his army of Samaria, and said, what do these feeble Jews, what do they think they're doing? He's telling his guys, will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? What do these people think they're doing? I've heard Satan say that so many times. What do you think you're doing? You think that you're going to be able to get back to being close to God? And look at the room. What do you think you're doing? This isn't going to happen. I've heard it so many times, I can't even remember how many times. And then Tobiah, verse 3, the Ammonite. So we have the Samaritans and we have the Ammonites. He was with him. They were kind of joining forces against this wall being built. And he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall break down their stone wall. So a fox, rather light little animal, not a huge animal. He just makes a joke like, well, even if a fox ran up on that wall, he would knock it down. It's not going to hold up. It's not going to be strong enough. So Sanballat and Tobiah, speaking poison. Folks, do not listen to poison. Don't listen to poisonous talk. I don't care if it's gossip about somebody or someone trying to discourage you from really growing in the Lord, whatever it might be, do not listen to the poisonous talk. These guys have nothing but poison to breathe out. So Nehemiah has an answer for that. In verse 4, he starts praying. Hear, O God, for we are despised and turned their reproach upon their own head and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. He starts praying to God. God, help us here. This is coming against us. This opposition is coming against us. Now, what is the opposition here? And you'll recognize it as soon as I mention it. The opposition is ridicule. Ridiculing them. And I know so many that struggle with this, the world is never going to approve of you or me. They're never going to approve of what you are, who you are, what you do, how you do it, because it's godly, it's spiritual, and they are never going to approve of that. So understand, ridicule is going to come, as it is here. This is the first thing the enemy tries to do, is make them feel dumb for wanting to walk with the Lord in a closer way. That's dumb. That's lame. There's better things to do with your life. You've got one life. You've got a single life. You don't want to waste it. How come you're in church all the time? Wasting your time. You could be out doing other stuff. Ridicule. Putting them down. So the answer to that is what he does. He prays. He prays and asks the Lord to help him. And cover not their iniquity, he says. Listen, let not their sin be blotted out from before thee. Now, some people have balked at this and saying, wow, Nehemiah, that's a little harsh, isn't it? Now, keep in mind there's a picture here. Sanballat, Tobiah, the poison. That is sin that will never be blotted out. Sin doesn't just get taken away. Sin has to be paid for. Right? Who pays for the sin? Jesus Christ. So this represents the reality that sin, the evil, the wickedness, it doesn't survive. God doesn't just say, oh, I'll just wink at that and let that go. No, no, no. It has to be paid for. And he says, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. Lord, they're against you. This whole offense, this whole ridicule, this whole opposition, it's an offense against you, God, because this is your work. That's the truth about acknowledging this. It's your work, God. I say it all the time. Lord, this is your work. You can do what you want here. But this is coming against, and we just need your help, you know, to do this. So he prays, and God gives them ability. And verse 6 says, so built we the wall. We started building the wall. And all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Question, do we have a mind to work? I'm not asking if you have a mind. I know you have a mind. Do we have a mind to work? Meaning, is our intention mindful to do the work of God? Whatever that means, whether it's rebuilding or starting something new or whatever it might be, do we have a mind to work? They had a mind to work, and I want you to notice they got through half the building project. That prayer of Nehemiah's was met and answered by God, and they built half the wall until opposition came again. In verse 7, but it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites, now they got some friends with them. They went out and recruited some buddies. They're half done with the project. Everybody to the wall. Grab all these leaders from other countries. Let's go, because they're half done. When they heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, they started repairing the breaches, then they were very wroth or angry and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. So their sole purpose, the children of Israel have a mind to work and rebuild. All these others that are around them have a mind to destroy, a mind to hinder, a mind to stop it from happening. And people will say, man, I think we're outnumbered in this world. Not really. You know, if God be for us, who can be against us? I mean, you know, me, you, any one of us and God is a majority and a powerful foe to any enemy. So we are not outnumbered as long as we're on God's side. So I want you to know, though, the way that they come at them, the second kind of onslaught here, was by intimidation. They got angry. And when a whole group of these enemies get angry and start fuming and start getting ready to assault you, and you can tell, you can feel it, that intimidation has an effect on many. And perhaps it's had an effect on all of us at different times, depending on the level of intimidation. But sometimes, you know, this world and what it says about us and what it does against us is intimidating. We don't like to be hated. We don't like people to be mad at us. And this prevents many people from really continuing on and building and letting the Lord do some things and restructuring and having his way. It's intimidation, and it's strong. It's very powerful. But nevertheless, verse 9 says, we made our prayer unto our God. Everything that is addressed in this particular context of rebuilding is met with prayer. Whenever the enemy pops up, they go to prayer. You know, prayer is the communication we have with God. It's connecting to God. That's what prayer is. We connect with him. And so if you're in a place where this is getting difficult because everything seems to be against you, growing and rebuilding and doing all these things, then you need to pray more. More prayer is needed. So they prayed unto our God, he says, and set a watch against them day and night because of them. We had to put guards up against these people because they were getting pretty aggressive. They were getting angry, but they're starting to get aggressive. We feared that they were going to actually assault us physically, come at us physically. So watching and praying, putting out a watch. Jesus said that, watch and pray. Be on your guard and pray. Watch and see what's happening. Don't be ignorant about what's going on and pray. In our prophecy update, it was talking about the fact that things are happening. Jesus rebuked the Pharisees for not being aware of what season it was. When he came, they should have known he was coming. All the prophecies about the Messiah. And he says, you know how to tell when it's going to rain or when the weather's changing, but you can't read the signs of the times. You don't know what's happening spiritually. And he rebuked them for that. And so when things are happening, we should know, we should be aware, watching what's happening, realizing, ooh, this is fitting right in with what is going to happen in the end times. And this seems to be lining up pretty nicely here. And start praying. Watching will just get you bummed. Watching and praying will keep you encouraged. Connecting to God, because God will always meet you in that sense. And so, did the discouraging attempt work? Well, listen, verse 10, Judah. Now, Judah, man, he's the tribe of Judah. Means praise. It's the lineage by which David came through, the lineage that Jesus came through. This is the tribe of Judah. They should be above all the tribes, the most praiseworthy, the most encouraging group, right? But Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed. The workers are decaying. They're starting to fall apart. Right on the heels of this intimidation, Judah says things are starting to get ruined, and there is much rubbish so that we are not able to build the wall. So there it is. I hear my own voice saying that sometimes. Right? Okay, that's it. It's too heavy. It's too much. Trying to live in this world as a Christian, everybody ridicules and tries to intimidate, and plus you got Satan and all that to contend with. There's too much rubbish. And I get it. The world's full of rubbish. It's trashed. You know, somebody needs to take out the trash of this world. That's our heart, right? We know that's true. But does that accomplish anything? Just pointing out the rubbish and bringing it up over and over again. Look at that trash. Yeah, that's stinky. Look at that over there. Oh, that's trashy. Rubbish. Yep. So what's your point, Judah? Why are you bringing that up? Well, the people are tired and decaying. So I think you're tired and decaying. But you're putting it off on the people. This is common, isn't it? I'm wiped, I'm tired, I'm decaying, I'm falling apart. What's wrong with those people? What's wrong with it? How come they're falling apart? What's wrong with that? It's really just me, Judah, it's just you. You're tired of the burden. And you're blaming too much rubbish on your own decayed condition. That preaches, man. Look at the rubbish of this world. No wonder I'm such a train wreck. No wonder my life's such a mess. No wonder I'm such an awful person. No wonder I get mad and shout at people. No wonder I get road rage. No wonder. I mean, it's all the rubbish. Look at this. He goes on. He's not done. And our adversary said, they shall not know neither see till we come in the midst of them and slay them and cause the work to cease. Oh, there's the real issue. It's not too much rubbish. It's just building material. You can work with it. But really the issue was you became afraid. Fear. Judah's acknowledging here, he's admitting that he's afraid because they've said they're going to come in and kill us now. They're not going to let the wall be built. This is going to end very soon. As soon as they come, they're going to destroy us all. Doom and gloom. That's another one of the enemy's ploys, fear. Using fear to control people and to keep people from doing what God wants them to do. Because we know, don't we? Fear is not of the Lord. So whenever fear is used, it's not God's will. God did not give us the spirit of fear, but of power and a sound mind. You don't have to be afraid, but when you are afraid, it's just a result of the fact that this attitude's crept into your heart. Oh, I'm tired of this. And I understand, I'm tired of this world and everything in it. I'm just sick and tired of everything. But I'm not done yet. And all the rubbish that's in this world, hey, listen, if you're a Christian, the rubbish is job security. Huh? I mean, you'll never run out of work. You'll never run out of things to do. Look at all the rubbish. That's the attitude they should have had. Look, we've got all this material we can build with. Not, oh, it's too much. We got to quit. We got to stop. No. Came to pass, verse 12, that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto them, unto us, 10 times they've said this, from all places whence you shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Now the Jews came, their own people, not the ones necessarily building the wall, but there was 50,000 or more people that returned from Babylon after the captivity that were there in Jerusalem, Jews. And even the Jews came to them and said, well, you guys don't have a chance. They were discouraged, discouragement from your own people. Kind of the worst kind of discouragement. When you hear it from your own people. You know, the enemy's persistent. If he can't ridicule you out of your walk with the Lord, he'll try and intimidate you out of it. If he can't intimidate you, then he'll threaten you directly. And of course, if that doesn't work, he'll use somebody close to you to do it. And that hurts. And it's effective. There's nothing more difficult than dealing with someone that's close to you, and yet they're trying to discourage you from walking with the Lord and growing. Isn't it true?
Yes.
And so he's persistent. He'll use any means he has to. So verse 13, Nehemiah does this, and this is a great understanding here. Therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. He took the men that were building, the workers. He set them, whether they're up on the wall or down low working on it, wherever they were, he set them in a place and put their families behind them inside the built wall. He put the families of the workers. So they had their spears and their bows and all that with them. It says, and I looked, verse 14, and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not afraid of them. Don't be afraid of all this threat. Remember the Lord. Remember him. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren. Remember God now and get busy. Quit sitting around listening to the threats of the enemy. Get after it. Remember God's on your side. And fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters and your wives and your houses. The workers on the wall, all they had to do to have some perspective is turn around. And there their kids are playing inside the wall, right behind them, right there by their dwelling places. Their wives, right, their kids, their brothers, their sisters, everybody. And Nehemiah says, remember that God's on your side, and you need to fight for your families. Man, if this is true today, is it? Fighting for your families? Whew. Families are falling apart everywhere. Kids are falling apart. And the world just kind of sucks people up and spits them out. But I'll tell you something, folks. God will fight for us. And has. And he's won. But when it comes to this idea of rebuilding, going back, getting strong again in the Lord, you're going to have to fight for it. It's just not going to happen. You've got to fight for that. Spiritual life. Spiritual power. All that. It comes through this means. I need to remember God's power and he's on my side. And then I need to get after fighting for my own family, for my own household. Fight for him, he says. And it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us and God had brought their counsel to nothing or to naught, that we returned, all of us, to the wall, every one unto his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows and the habergons. And the rulers were behind all the house of Judah, they which builded on the wall, and they that bear the burdens with those that laid it, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand he held a weapon. Charles Spurgeon wrote a little book called The Sword and the Trowel. Speaking of this reality, one hand you have the tool to work. The other hand you have a sword, a weapon. And these guys would work with one hand with their trowels and their tools. And with the other hand, they're ready. They're ready to fight. Many times, we try and work with both hands. Working. That's all we're doing is working. But that's not the picture here. The picture here is work with one hand, but make sure that you've got the sword. We would say the sword of the Spirit, the power of God. And the other hand, making sure that our work is not just in vain. It's effective because we remember the power of God. We've got this balance. I work, but I've got the power. I've got the sword. I've got the tools. And God gives me the tools, but he never wants me to let go of the sword. And so they work, these guys, with this kind of heart and intent. For the builders, everyone had his sword girded by his side and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. So Nehemiah has a trumpet blower, a trumpeter next to him. Why? Because, watch this. I'm almost done, by the way. He said, and I said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall one from another. As the project spread out, people started spreading out. It started getting, you know, further and further apart. People were kind of separated. So he said, in what place, therefore, you hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, our God shall fight for us. Ah, so the trumpet next to Nehemiah, the man next to him that was going to blow the trumpet, would do so when this thing got out of hand. Something happened on a part of the wall where one guy's there, and all of a sudden perhaps an enemy's trying to take him out. Then the trumpet would blow. And Nehemiah's vantage point, he could see the wall. And if he saw somebody in trouble, he had his trumpet blower blow the trumpet, and everybody would gather to help. What a great picture this is. What a reality this should be as a church. If you have to be somewhat separated, make sure that when trouble comes, you blow the trumpet. You sound the call for help. You know, we have to be prepared for this project, folks. for warfare as well as for building. But building is the end of the project. Fighting is the means of the project. So, yes, God's going to win, but we have to fight. Paul said, fight that good fight. Keep fighting that good fight. Don't give up on the fight. God's going to win. He already has won, but we still need to be fighting. And, you know, the workers kept working, listening for the trumpet occasionally when it blew, and they were ready to run and give help. I also think about that, you know, here they are. They're building away, but they're actually, like us, waiting to hear the trumpet. You know, Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 4:16, we're waiting to hear that trump, that last trump, man. The trumpet blows, the sound of Jesus' voice saying, come up here, let's go. We're waiting to hear that. Meanwhile, we keep building, we keep going, we keep fighting. Help each other in the body of Christ, folks. Help each other. Listen for the signal. Don't be deafened to the trumpet that somebody might be blowing. Sometimes people drop these subtle hints. It's kind of like a muffled trumpet. You ever seen those things they put in a trumpet? It's like blocks most of the sound, and it sounds muted. That's how some people give their signal. It's not necessarily the loudest signal, but as a believer, we should be in tune to hear distress calls. Don't just be too much about yourself that you don't hear anybody. You don't recognize it. You don't hear anybody calling out for help. The signals and signs are obvious if you're looking for them. If you're not looking for them, granted, you probably won't hear it. But I want to point out one last thing. It's in chapter 6, verse 15. It says, so the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month of Elul. It was finished in 52 days. Less than 2 months. How do you do that? With hand workers, working with hands. And they didn't, by the way, they didn't have like these giant excavators and bulldozers. And this was all handwork. And the miracle of this story is that not only did it get finished with all that opposition and all that rubbish and all that stuff, but it got done in record time because God was in it. He was into it and made it happen. Now, again, I don't think you would have looked at this wall and said, wow, what a masterpiece. Look at that. Look at the craftsmanship. I think you would have said, well, that's a wall for you. Look at that. But it got built. And if you need to be rebuilt, folks, it'll happen. Follow this pattern. Follow the example here. People criticized the wall when it was done because it wasn't pretty. But God blessed it because it was His. That's me, right? People can criticize because I'm not pretty, but I'm God's. And His blessing's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for praise of man. I'm not looking for the critics to change their mind about me. I know God has blessed me because I'm His, such as I am. Built from rubbish. Rebuilt again from rubbish. And again. Many times over. God's a rebuilder of lives. Amen. Let's pray. God, thank you for that. We acknowledge that, Lord, all these things speak to us in such a personal way. We need to hear this. We need so many times to acknowledge where we're at and come to you with it. And you're ready. You're ready with all the tools and the power to get it done. So help us, Lord, to have wisdom. Give us understanding into this and show us what we're to be about in this next season of our life? What do you want? And how is that going to work? And what tools and what abilities do we need? And we know you're able, Lord, to do all these things. And so we trust you and we thank you for your word. And Lord, I just pray that you would continue on with us as you did these people in the days of Israel's history. And I just need to mention, this is a new year. You perhaps have a great relationship with the Lord. Maybe your relationship needs some help, and this might have spoken to you on that. But for those who don't know the Lord, anybody watching or listening right now, your life can't be rebuilt until it's built upon the rock. If you build your house upon the sand, it's going to sink and it's going to fall apart. But Jesus is the rock. He's the solid rock for us. And we build our lives on him. And it's solid and it's eternal. So if you don't know Jesus, your life will crumble. Ultimately, it's just going to fall apart. And when that happens, you will not have the ability to rebuild unless you have Jesus Christ. So ask him into your heart. Just say, Lord, you can come and save me. I need that. I need to have my sins forgiven, and I need a life that's different. And I believe in you, and I trust you for my life, and invite him in today and start the year off right. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Let's stand. Thank you, guys. Involved study, but I think so necessary right now. Have a great week. Enjoy the new year. And let's get after it. Let's rebuild, you know. The Lord bless thee,
the Lord bless
thee, and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee, and be gracious unto thee, and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. God bless. Have a great week.